Subway everyday value means many mouth-watering pile-high favorites are $5 footlongs, like the fresh-toasted tempting meatball marinara and made-to-your-order BLT. The $5 footlong anthem rolls on only at Subway, where great everyday value lives. Subway, eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. BS Report back after a one-week hiatus. I was in Tribeca for the Tribeca Film Festival, New York City. Nice to be back home in sunny California after four straight days of rain. On the line right now, the Subway Fresh Take hotline, our old friend Mark Stein. What's happening?
Not much. What's going on?
How many more years are you going to luck out with a San Antonio-Dallas playoff series? That's really like a home series for you. It's like it's happening in your living room.
But, I feel lucky, but I always wonder, does America even care about this one anymore? You know,
about this series?
Yeah, I mean, last night, NBA TV, Lakers are on.
Well, that was a bet.
I thought only Texas pays attention to the series.
That was the luck of the draw, though, because the Lakers had to be the same day, and obviously TNT is going to pick a Laker game over Dallas San Antonio, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I honestly feel like there's this level of Mavs Spurs fatigue outside of the state of Texas, but
well, that's
stupid. You know, these teams always put on a good show. They can't help themselves.
Yeah, that's first of all, that's stupid. Second of all, I would argue that Game 6 of this series is the best game on paper of the entire playoffs so far. I have no idea what's going to happen. I think it's going to be dramatic. I don't know who the star is going to be. And I think it's a must-win for San Antonio. How do you think it plays out?
Well, the Mavs only have a chance if they can get a tempo like they did last night. Can they get stops in San Antonio? Can they not get caught up in the refs and the physicality? Are they going to be able to run? Are they going to be able to start well? They haven't started well there, and that's really been the killer for them. I mean, they got to get some shots to go down early. So, I wouldn't have thought that those things would be an issue in three straight games because this is the best road team in the league this year. But those first two games in San Antonio, to me, were not as close as the scores looked. So they're going to have to make a major, major step up if they want to win Game 6.
And then to lose Game 4 when Duncan goes 1-for-9 and Manu goes something like 4-for-38, I thought this series might be over. And then yesterday the Mavs come out strong. And we've seen Popovich do this before. I don't want to say he conceded the game, but I wouldn't say there was like an incredible amount of urgency for the Spurs there. Maybe saving the legs a little bit for Game 6 to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, if they didn't start the second half so badly, maybe he wouldn't have gone down that road. But, the end of the first half, they cut a 17-point deficit to 7 in a snap. And that was where you thought, all right, are the Mavs going to fold again like they did in Game 4? Are they even going to be able to hold on? And Dallas just hit him with a 15-3 run right to start the third quarter, and that's when Pop just said, look, we're on every other day rest. I can't really fault him there. I think with his crew and really Ginobili has not played well since the nose got busted. Duncan's had two bad games in a row. You know, at that point it probably was the right call.
Yeah, I agreed with it as well. It was very early to see Jan Mahimi or whatever his name is. Say, like, whoa, it's the third quarter for Jan.
Jan Mahimi.
Mahimi.
A lot of my man Roger Mason, my favorite Spur.
Yeah.
Garrett Temple action.
I got to say, Ginobili's broken nose. And I remember thinking this when it happened because, and he stunk in Game 4 and he wasn't very good last night. Pretty tough to remove the whole breathing out of the nose thing out of the NBA player's repertoire. I'm not saying you can't figure it out eventually, but it's a sizable obstacle.
It didn't stop him from turning the tide in Game 3. I mean, he had done nothing in the first half before he broke the nose. You know, he scored, what, 11 in the fourth quarter in game three and just was, you know, went right to the rack. I mean, he just sticks his, I mean, that's just how tough the guy is. He just sticks his face right back in the paint after getting his nose busted.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, you know, it, over the course of a series, it definitely is not something you choose to play with.
And I guess I would have imagined if he could survive the night that it got busted, you would think things would get better. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm no doctor.
Yeah, that thing, it was certainly the biggest bandage I've ever seen.
I'm going to leave those jokes to you.
Yeah.
You can probably get away with those.
It's a very easy joke to make, and I'm not going to make it. But
yeah, the truth is his whole team busts on him anyway. There's probably nothing we can say that he hasn't already heard.
Yeah. So, Spurs, I kind of felt like I just didn't think they had enough time to put this together because, you know, heading into the playoffs, the pieces were there, but the pieces hadn't had enough time to be together. And I'm surprised by this Dallas series, mainly because I didn't think they would be able to kind of hit the stride that they hit in games 2, 3, and 4. Or was Dallas just not as good as we thought?
Well, I think we probably underestimated the Spurs. I think that's really the more likely scenario because I got to tip my hat to Parker. I don't think he's thrilled coming off the bench, but he does it. I mean, he really won them that one game in San Antonio where whole fourth quarter they say, all right, stand in the corner and be a weak side spot-up guy. This is Manu's team now. But then when they needed 3 20-footers to win the game, which has never been Parker's strength, he drains them. And then the other thing, George Hill is just unreal. Yet again, with a pick in the late 20s, I mean, they found another really good player. I mean, I don't know how they continue to do it. This guy from IUPUI. And
yeah.
The guy's sensational. I mean, he his corner three is deadly. He's been all over Kidd. I mean, this guy, they didn't even want to play him in the playoffs last year. And a year later, I mean, he's a major, major factor.
And when you look at the series, I thought it was a really good matchup for Dallas because they had the two big guys to throw at Duncan. Dirk's always been a tough matchup for San Antonio. And I just didn't know if San Antonio had the kind of pieces to exploit what the Dallas weaknesses were. And actually, they do because George Hill's playing well. And now you have three guards that can all get to the rim and do what they want if they're playing well. And that's Dallas's weakness, in my opinion.
The other thing is we really underestimated their team defense. Everybody talks about how Duncan is getting old. He's got no lift. He doesn't rebound the same. He doesn't change shots anymore. But as a team now, I mean, their team defense is as good as ever. McDice, Hill, these guys weren't playing. You know, they didn't have these guys last year, and now they're solid. They're solid defensively in every spot on the floor. There's no real weak link that the Mavs can just go at. So especially at the home games, they just don't let Dallas run. And if Dallas can't run, they can't win. Dirk does not have enough help. Dirk's the only one who can score consistently. So if they can't run in game six, this thing is over.
Jason Kidd, not a good series. You know, we battled back and forth on that trade. I think if they get knocked out in the first round, that will make them 1-3 in the playoff series since this trade. Do you think that he has lost his fastball or just a bad series?
I think if they don't get stops and can't run, that's obviously going to impact him. And if Dirk is the only one really going, you know, there's not an offense for him to run. And again, you know, this is where you give Pop credit and just the way they run their defense. I mean, they've taken away Kidd's three better than anybody has all season. I mean, that's really the one thing Kidd now does better than he ever has. I mean, he's been the Mavs' best three-point shooter the last 2 years. And they just run at him. They take it away. They make him put it on the floor. And at this point in his career, Jason's not going to pull up in the lane and make runners or go right to the cup every time like he used to, you know, when he was younger and he was such a great finisher at the basket. I mean, he needs those open threes to get going. And the Spurs, they've really taken it away from him.
What about the French rookie, the point guard?
Everybody here wants him to play. He's honestly, I would say, next to Dirk, the most popular Mav in this town, which is amazing.
Wow.
But he's not a good pick and roll defender. And you know that the Spurs, when they see him on the floor, are going to just attack him every time. So I think that's why they're hesitant to play him. He's got to be out there with Kidd if you're going to have him out there.
Yeah.
He's probably, you know, he's probably not quite ready for this. And if he, you know, you would have liked to seen him get more run in the home games to throw him out. I mean, I'm sure we'll see him in Game 6 if things get desperate. But if you see him in Game 6, that means things have gone really, really bad for the Mavs.
I picked Dallas to make the finals, and I got an email from somebody like a day later who said, Simmons, this is a rookie mistake by you. Dallas changed 40% of their crunch time five in February, and you should know more than anyone that, you know, it takes time for guys to gel. And in the playoffs, when you have tight games, the team that's been playing together for a long time is going to beat the team that hasn't. The Spurs are going to win this series. And I read the email and I was like, oh, crap. I didn't factor in that 40% thing. How much do you think that's mattered in this?
You know, it is a good, it is a great point. And I made, you know, if you want to call it a mistake, I made the same mistake going into the series. Because what I thought was, it would be worse for the Mavs to play Oklahoma City or Portland. These young, long, athletic teams with nothing to lose.
I agreed with you, by the way.
And they're going to just cause the Mavs all kinds of trouble. They'll have no pressure on them. With San Antonio, they know what they're getting. They know how to win in San Antonio. They're not going to be surprised by anything. But, yeah, the continuity factor. I mean, San Antonio knows exactly what they want to do. And as you saw last night with Caron Butler finally joining the series, it took the Mavs five games to get him going. And they have no more, they have no more time, really, to mess around. So you know, that is true that that continuity thing is exposed against San Antonio probably more than it would be against anybody else.
The Danny Crawford situation in Game 3 did not get huge national play. I felt like it should have. His, you know, since I think 2003, Dallas's record in playoff games that he's officiated is now 2-16 after Game 3. I know that was a big story in Dallas. I'm not sure why it wasn't a gigantic story nationally.
Even here, it probably wasn't as big as it should be. Because I mean, it, you know, I'm not the stats guy around our place, but that is a startling number. I mean, that's just amazing. And you know, obviously, this is something that the Mavs have been complaining about for years. It's something that's been talked about for years, and that's probably why it doesn't get attention, because you know, the Mavs are seen as the team that cries wolf all the time, and so you know, anytime there's a ref story involving the Mavs, it immediately gets dismissed or, you know, shunned, whatever word you want to use. But I mean, well, I think the interesting thing now is that the Spurs feel almost as, you know, hopeless as the Mavs. When the Mavs see Danny Crawford, they feel hopeless. And the Spurs feel almost the same way when Joey Crawford shows up.
Yep.
Joey Crawford hasn't worked a game in this series. So if he shows up for Game 6, it gets even more interesting.
And that's a possibility because he officiated the Phoenix-Portland Game 5. So he's probably due to work either today or tomorrow. So we could see him. Yeah, I agree with you on Cuban.
We could probably each be fined $35,000 for even talking about this publicly, right?
Well, you know what? I honestly think it's arrogant of Stern, first of all, to keep brushing this under the rug like this isn't an issue, because you have a couple of teams in the playoffs that feel like if there's a certain referee involved, they don't have a chance. The Celtics feel that way about Bill Kennedy. The Spurs feel that way about Joey Crawford. And the Mavericks feel that way about Danny Crawford. And for the league to pretend that this isn't happening and that, you know, there's not something seriously going on here, especially after the Donahue book, and especially whether you believe this guy or not, and whether he was talking out of his butt or not, and whether he's a scumbag or not, this guy still based a lot of his gambling on refs having certain predilections toward or against teams. And now we have three referees where, you know, the history doesn't look good. Why does the NBA put themselves in the position of even having these guys involved in those playoff series?
Well, I think if they yanked him out of the series, then they would be. Then people would be saying, "See, you're admitting it. You're admitting that these guys have biases against these teams."
But 2-16 is not a freaking coincidence. At
well,
some point,
I see it two ways. I don't think there's any question when you see numbers like that you know, we need to look at this more. It needs to be talked about more. We shouldn't be letting the NBA just sweep this under the rug. They do owe us more explanations. But on the flip side, I think I'm more amazed that these numbers are all in circulation. We have so much more data to talk about. You know, Kennedy with the Celtics or the Crawfords, the respective Crawford things with the Texas teams. We have these things, we talk about them, but it doesn't seem to drive people away. You know, you always hear people say, I'm done with the NBA, I'm never watching again, but it's not true.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, like, interest just seems to be rising since the whole Donaghy thing. I mean, I don't feel like there's been a decline at all.
Well, that we are missing some refs this year, including two good ones, Steve Javy and Mark Wunderlich, who I think, would you say, at least at the very least, are crew chiefs when they
Yeah, I mean, it surprises me, you know, like, Wunderlich had the call in the Mavs series against Denver last year, which basically cost the Mavs.
But he's still
game
good.
Three. And,
he's still
and
good
I thought,
though.
And I thought, so, but the Mavs, you know, I've, you know, the Mavs still like that guy. Like, they're not even, you know,
yeah.
I don't hear them, you know, saying, yes, great news that Wunderlich's not here.
I would say they are two of maybe the top seven or eight.
Yeah, I
would
agree.
You say?
Yeah.
And both of them are injured and out for the playoffs.
Yep.
And there's two more missing that aren't on that level. But I have seen some referees in these playoff games that make you go, oh, no, that guy got a playoff assignment? Like, there's been a couple of those moments in this series. And I do wonder as it goes along, especially in round two, which is when they thin the crop to some degree and they go with, like, their best guys, not having two of their best guys. I do worry that this could end badly for somebody.
You know what, the thing that I've gone back and forth with Cuban for years on this, what I still don't know is where are the better refs? Where are the better ones? Who's going to train them? Who's going to make them? I mean, I don't watch a lot of college basketball, but everything I hear is that the refereeing in college is 10 times worse.
Yep.
So, where are these good refs? These refs that are going to make it better? And that's something that I don't think anybody has really come up with an answer for. You know, there's going to be a ref school, there's going to be this, but who's going to run that ref school?
Well,
you know, FIBA refs are, you know, NBA players who play in international competition just talk about how bad the FIBA refs are.
Doesn't this come down to just money and energy? Isn't this like anything else? Like, I don't feel like the infrastructure that they have in place is good enough right now.
But there still has, and I agree with you, but there's, who is going to teach them? If we don't like what we're seeing now, who's gonna teach refs to be better?
Well, my biggest issue is that, and I look at the Oklahoma Lakers series. That series from game to game depends a lot on how Ron Artest is allowed to defend Kevin Durant. And I went to game two. I was there in person. I had good seats. And that was what fascinated me most of the game, because in the first quarter, Artest was allowed to, you know, do what he does. Hold, punch, grab, push, do all his things. And the refs let him get away with it. It was established. And he took Durant out of the game. Durant ended up having 32, but it was, you know, he had to work his absolute butt off to get the 32. And Artest was just in his jersey, basically. And then another game comes, and all of a sudden they're whistling Artest. And that's the part that they haven't figured out yet, is from game to game it shifts.
Yep, and that'll be, you know, in the Mavs-Spurs series, that's as big as anything. You know, the Mavs will say when the games are down in San Antonio, the Spurs can rough them up and nothing happens.
Yep.
Last night, they're allowed to play their game, and you see the result.
And we've seen a couple games in the playoffs where the refs have been completely taken out of the game by the crowd. And the best example was Portland and Phoenix, game three. Brandon Roy comes back, the Willis Reed moment. In the last 8 minutes of the fourth quarter, I think Portland just got every call. There was a terrible, 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 awful flagrant foul call on Channing Frye. That was just a joke. It was just really one of the worst calls in the history of the playoffs. And a couple other bad ones. And it just became clear that the crowd was controlling the refs, which, congratulations to them. That's what a crowd's supposed to do. I do worry about that as we go to these later rounds with some of the green officiating crews. But, man, you know, you look at that Phoenix series, and weren't you thinking, like, this Brandon Roy thing, Phoenix is going to lose again on some sort of bogus thing? Then they come back and they were great in game five. Do you buy this Phoenix team?
I definitely buy it in this round, but, I mean, how are they going to win the next round without Robin Lopez? And even if Lopez comes back, I mean, there's no time for him to get in game shape. You know, what kind of impact is he going to have? Especially against San Antonio, if it's Spurs, Suns. I mean, I just don't see how they can win a series without him.
Spurs, Suns is a bad matchup.
they were a different team with him.
I agree. Spurs-Suns is a worst-case scenario for them. I think that Mavs-Suns, I think the Suns could beat them and kind of create their own pace and do the things they need to do. Are we sure Lopez isn't coming back, though?
I think he's coming back. But the signals I'm hearing are, look, don't expect him, if he does come back, don't expect him to be, you know, 25, 30 minutes a game, you know, just like he was before. Because, you know, the guy hasn't played for you know, more than a month.
Right.
And I just think it's probably unrealistic for us to think that he's just going to walk back in and be a 30-minute guy again.
What's been the biggest surprise for you in the playoffs?
Utah. I was so wrong about those guys. I just thought Denver's got home court. Denver's had this team's number for a while. Utah's just lost two of its five best players. Nuggets, yeah, even without George Karl, are going to get through this thing.
I fell through the same hole. But and then the other part you didn't mention was that they had nobody to guard Carmelo. And if you watch game one, you're like, oh, man, this series isn't going to last long. The thing we all forgot, though, was that they still had their best two guys. You know, and it was like, yeah, this guy's hurt, that guy's hurt. But they have a system that they've had for 25 years. Weber made a great point about this on TNT the other night. You know, trust the system. When you have a system that everybody trusts, the players can move in and out. As long as you have your two big guns, you're going to be okay. And we've seen that. And the other thing I think we discounted was if you don't have a coach, you know what that means? You don't have a coach. You know, Denver just look like a Division II team.
They're not disciplined in the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
And so to be undisciplined against the kings of discipline, that's the problem.
Man.
And
hey,
last year, we, you know, so many of us fell into this because that was the word all last season. Chauncey runs this team. Even George would say Chauncey's the real coach of this team. But I mean, Chauncey is still a great, great player, and I think he's just one of those guys who's, you know, always has more of an impact on the game than the box score might tell you. But, you know, he needs a coach there, as good as he is. And, you know, they miss George more than they ever thought. And also, Kenyon is not – I mean, he's playing, but he's not having – you know, he's not as physically, you know, close to full strength as he was during the regular season, because I think he was very quietly having what might have been the best season of his career before he went down. So,
and they're a big guy short too. So when you have a team like Utah that loses their center, and they can't really exploit it. It's not like, oh, now Nene is going to run amok. It still comes down
to... Your pal D. Will also seems to have hit another level.
Yeah, although I don't know if he's hit another level or maybe Chauncey Billups isn't very good anymore. But either way, it's pretty one-sided. That Williams is doing whatever he wants. I would say, you know, and I felt this way at the All-Star game too. And I, you know, it's an All-Star game. It's a playground game. It's dumb. But at the same time, you do kind of see, it is a nice way to see kind of who matters. And to me, until he made that bonehead mistake at the end of that game, I thought he was one of the four best guys in that game. And that kind of made me rethink, is this guy better than maybe I'm giving him credit for? I thought he was awesome down the stretch. He's been awesome in this series. I gotta say, I think he's the best point guard. Chris Paul, we don't know about his knee. We don't, you know, bad team. I think Darren Williams has the point guard conch, using a Lord of the Flies term.
He is.
What'd you say?
He's something else, man. I mean, I'm a fan of his because I actually live now where he grew up.
Yeah.
Except when he lived here, it was like dirt roads and like none of this was developed, so he's a local legend where I live. And my only problem with D. Will is he thinks Whataburger is better than In-N-Out. That's my only quarrel with that guy at this point.
What did you think of Portland's decision to play Brandon Ray?
Totally against it.
Me too. Absolutely,
couldn't be more against it. I don't care if he gets through this series, fine. Can they win a championship this year? No. I mean, even if they could win a championship, I mean, you have to question it. I just don't know what the payoff is of playing him when they've already had so many issues.
Yeah.
Why? You know, why? Where are you on it?
I hated it. I tweeted as it happened. I just think that it's the kind of decision that a team makes when their front office and their ownership is in disarray. It's a short-term decision, not a long-term one. And I think any good franchise that is all on the same page and is not worried about their jobs next year, isn't, you know, has the kind of front office in place that could talk the owner out of greenlighting something this dumb, would be able to say, you know what, we're not going to win the title this year. Let's not risk it. This guy already has bad knees. It's just not worth it. It's stupid. And then, of course, he comes out, does the Willis Reed thing, makes a couple shots in the fourth quarter, and everybody's like, oh, that was a great idea. I don't care if they won or lost. I just thought it was stupid.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no payoff.
No. And, you know, I ask you, like, imagine, like, this is the example. I was arguing about this with somebody this weekend in New York. This is the example I use. Imagine if this was Durant. And this was Oklahoma City, and he had this knee thing, and he came back in 8 days. Everybody would be like, are you crazy? Don't mess with Durant. To me, Brandon Roy should get that same respect. You know, it's not somebody you want to, like, mess around with, and especially considering that this was the main reason he dropped in the draft was because people worried about his knees. Now he had a surgical procedure on one of those knees. They're rushing him back. And, you know, Barkley made a good point, I think two nights ago or maybe last night, but about talking about – it's a confidence thing, and you're not going to trust the knee totally. To pretend that you will is stupid. And if you're tentative or you're not totally sure, like that's when you get injured as an athlete. If you're not totally in control of your body. I don't know. And then here's the other thing. This is a little unfair, but man, you throw in Portland's history with injuries. Is this the last franchise that should be messing around with something?
Yeah,
like this?
I mean I don't think that's unfair. I think that's got to be at the forefront of everybody's mind. I mean, they made this number one pick that, you know, obviously everyone now is second guessing and saying was this huge mistake. You know, they've got to live with that. You know, to risk Roy too is just ridiculous. I mean, there's just no justification.
If you had to bet on a West team to come out of the conference, who would you pick right now?
I would still say Lakers, but I think the winner of this Dallas-San Antonio series has an opportunity. The Lakers have shown enough vulnerability to me that the winner of this Dallas-San Antonio series could win the West Finals.
And I actually felt that way before the series.
I mean, if the Mavs can rise off the mat and win this thing after being 3-1 down, I think it gives them an opportunity, because if they can finally get to the Lakers, who they have not played in the playoffs in the Cuban era, they will not have any pressure. It will be a position that they've really never been in, when no one's going to expect them to win and they can really just let loose and play. I think they would be very, very dangerous in that series. And then the way San Antonio has played in the series up till last night has just kind of convinced me that they're deeper than we thought. They are built for the playoffs, like Duncan says, but there's that thing in the back of your mind that after watching these last two games, seeing the state of Duncan and Ginobili now, can those guys drag through two more, you know, another round before they even get to the Lakers? What are they going to have? What are they going to have left in the later rounds of the playoffs?
Well, I picked Utah before the playoffs, and by the way, my picks were terrible this year, I'd be the first to admit. I had Miami beating Boston. I had Charlotte giving Orlando a series. I did think Oklahoma and the Lakers would go long, but I thought Utah could beat the Lakers in round two. I just think it's a good matchup for them.
The only problem is they never do. They never beat the Lakers, and I do think that with that team, there is a mental block there. You know, the Jazz can get through anything, but They've got issues with the Lakers. The Lakers are in their heads for sure.
I agree with that, except that I think Williams is playing better than he's ever played. And I think Kobe is working harder to get his points than I've ever seen him work in the history of his career. Or I should just say his career, since I don't need to say history. But, you know, I thought it was pretty interesting that game four, that it was clear that Phil Jackson told him, we have a huge advantage down low. You got to get those guys involved. And Kobe obviously wasn't too crazy about the idea, as we witnessed with his performance, which had a little FU to it. And then in game five, he played a really good game. He was almost masterful, and he picked his spots, and the big guys carried the game, and that's how they're going to win that Oklahoma series, is by beating them down low. In a Utah series, I think he's the one that has to win that series. And I'm not sure that... You know, can he play four really good games?
Well, is Kirilenko going to be back? And what Kirilenko are they going to have? I mean, I would think they're going to need Kirilenko to beat the Lakers.
I think,
lengthwise, what is Boozer going to do against all that length?
Well, don't you think Kobe has to guard Darren Williams for them to win that series, though?
He won't do it the whole series. I think, you know, because I think we saw, you know, it was a huge move to put Kobe on Westbrook yesterday. But why did they wait 5 games to do it? Well, because Kobe can't do that for a whole series and have enough in the tank anymore. So
yeah, but they should have done it in crunch times. At the very least, done it for the fourth quarter of Game 2 and the fourth quarter of Game 3.
Yeah, I'll buy that. But I think they have to be, same thing with D. Will, they're going to have to be selective with it. I don't think you can just ask Kobe to do that for a whole series.
What do you think was a bigger non-trade that could affect the team's destiny? The OKC not getting Camby or L.A. not getting Kirk Heinrich, who played really well in round one?
I'd probably have to go L.A. because I think Presti has brainwashed me into believing that there is somewhat of a case for not making the Camby trade, even though up till now I was 100% on your side on that one.
He's brainwashed you and Bucher. What happens when you guys hang out with him?
I'm more on the fence. Bucher is 100% convinced.
But there's no argument. What is the argument? I guess the argument would be, oh, he's going to hurt Serge Ibaka's progress. Why does he have to hurt Serge Ibaka's progress? There's still 30 minutes a game going to Kristaps and Collison. That just could have been Marcus Camby's minutes.
Well, here's the thing. The reason I say Lakers is because, I mean, Oklahoma City was not going – they were not going far in this playoff no matter what. I mean, I know you'll disagree with me. You love that team. You think they could, you know, beat the Lakers and go further maybe, but I just think experience does matter. Young does not win the playoff. It's not like adding Camby was going to make them a title contender now.
Well, you know who agrees with you in that theory? Jeff Green and Thabo Sefolosha. Because both of them have been horrendous. And you know, that's the real reason that they're probably not going to win this series.
Whereas the Lakers, I mean, look, I can't sit here. The Lakers have spent so much money that I can't sit here and say, you guys are a joke for not taking on Heinrich's contract so you can pay your seventh man, you know, $8 million a year. I mean, even they have limits. You know, their payroll, they got five guys who are just making a ton of money. So I can understand why they didn't do the Heinrich deal. But, I mean, the way they look, they're short. I mean, they don't have enough the way it looks right now.
I see both ways. Yeah, they've already spent a lot of money. On the other hand, if you're going to give Kobe a $90 million extension of the guy that we're watching right now, and you're going to give Gasol an extension well before you have to, and it's pretty clear you're just throwing money around, and this is going to be the nucleus of your team. Odom is making $9 million a year to basically not even play in the last 8 minutes of big games. Hey, at that point, don't you go get Kirk Heinrich?
Yeah, but there might be a guard, and I can't sit here and tell you that I have a name off the tip of my tongue, but there might be ways, if they take a more reasoned approach, to find a guard who can do what Heinrich does for a much more reasonable price. I mean, they've just shelled out $160 million on extensions for their two main guys this year. So, you know, again, I can, and I think they clearly realize that giving Artest a 5-year deal was probably not the wisest. So, would getting Heinrich this year guarantee a championship? I still don't think it would guarantee that they win it all. So, if you look at it like that, it might be better for them to say, let's see if we can get through this year with what we got, and then we know we got to change our backcourt, but let's take a more reasoned look at it and see if we can do it in an economical way.
I'm going to defend them for a second. At the time when they could have gotten him, Heinrich was playing like crap. And I think that's the real reason they didn't do the trade, because he was in a massive shooting slump. But now he's not. And
let's not forget also, they've got to resolve Phil's future. I mean, you know, they're going to ask Phil to take a pay cut, but it's only going to be, you know, a marginal pay cut. It's not like Phil's going to go from $12 million to $6 million. So, I mean, they've still got to pay him.
You mean the 2010-2011 coach of your New York Knicks, Phil Jackson?
We'll see.
You heard that one, right?
I don't think Mike D'Antoni's going anywhere yet.
That one's floating around.
As much as the New York media, some of the members of the New York media would love to run him out of town for not winning for a team that was not intending to win.
Yeah, but you forget the part where D'Antoni and Donnie Walsh are kind of using their little media people to take shots at each other. Pretty
and
interesting.
That, and hey, that might be true, but I, you know, at this point, I think Mike is the face of their recruiting effort. I mean, if they're going to get a top free agent, Mike's a big part of that. So I, you know, I don't see how they could proceed without him.
If the Knicks are trotting out Phil Jackson, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh next year with Ray Allen as the free agent mid-level guy, and it comes down to throwing away D'Antoni's last 2 years to include Jackson into that mix, they could charge anything they want for tickets.
If that scenario plays out, I will note in every on every platform we have that you were the one who called it.
You know, what I have another random prediction. I think Ray Allen is a Dallas Maverick next year. I think he fits in with that team. He's over the hill, good veteran. He'll probably exceed whatever his potential would have been somewhere else.
Well, I think all those kind of guys are, you know, are interesting, kind of the free agents who, you know, you wouldn't say are in the LeBron, Wade, Bosh tier. You know, where guys like Ray Allen, I mean, I would have said Jermaine O'Neal until this series, which was just an absolute debacle for him.
Oh, he's awful.
But, you know, there are going to be a lot of guys who it's going to be interesting to see where they land. But I think win or lose, I mean, you can't talk about Dallas until we see what they do with their sign and trade prospects. I mean, they are going to be very active on that front. And then we'll see who they fill in the roster with. But
well, why don't you explain why? I know the reason, but maybe our audience doesn't.
They've got this Eric Dampier contract, which is very unusual in that it's got Dampier making $13 million next year, but you could, whoever trades for him can cut him, and that money is not guaranteed. So unlike most expiring contracts, which are no good after the trade deadline, This is a deal where the Mavs are going to peddle this Dampier contract at the draft or after the draft if they don't find a trade around draft time.
So, for example, I'm not even doing the LeBron example. Dallas goes to Miami, and they say, look, Dwayne Wade wants to play for us. We're going to play eight regular season games in the football stadium next year, and we need Dwayne Wade or LeBron. We'll give you right now, we'll give you Dampier's contract, our little French point guard that everybody loves, $3 million and a number one, and you trade us Dwayne Wade.
And Caron Butler.
Oh, yeah, and Caron. Forgot about him. And Caron Butler.
So they have the embryo of a pretty good sign and trade package. And I think something people need to remember, if you really look at free agents, a lot of them move in sign and trades. They move in sign and trades far more often than not when we're talking about big-dollar free agents. So because all those guys, they don't want to give up that extra year that they can get with their, you know, by staying with a home team, they can get an extra year that's worth between $20 and $30 million. So they, all these guys, Bosch, you know, we saw it with Rashard Lewis. You know, when these guys switch teams, they want to do it in a sign and trade so they can get that extra year. So
yes, it is the blueprint.
The Mavs will be in play for all those guys. Now whether they get any of them is a huge question mark. But I think that has to play itself out before we can think about who's going to fill in the roster after that.
Well, if I'm LeBron James and I'm leaving, there's only three teams I go to. I go to the Knicks because if I turn around basketball in New York, that's the greatest thing any professional athlete can do at this point. I go to Chicago so I could play with Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose, who have just proven that those guys are warriors and that they will win a title if LeBron is on their team. Or I go to Dallas and I play for, in my opinion, the best owner in sports, somebody who's has proven that he doesn't care about money, who will spend anything that he can to make his team better. And I'm in a city where I can play in a football stadium, and it's a good basketball city. I get to play with Dirk, Jason Kidd. It's a pretty good situation.
Your list.
Well, I think those are the three. I don't think.
I'm glad you've X'd the Clippers off there.
Well, I don't think it's realistic. They're going to fly him out here. He's going to meet Donald Sterling, and 5 minutes later, he's going to be back on a plane. I'm not going to play for that guy.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, they have a great setup with pieces, but there's just absolutely no way LeBron is entrusting his future to Donald Sterling.
Best unsubstantiated rumor that you've heard during the playoffs that you could throw out. You'd feel guilty about throwing it in a column because you'd have to like back it up. But in a podcast,
you ask me this question every time, and I'm never ready. And then you think I'm dodging you because I'm dodging you. I'm just dodging you because I don't have a – I suck when I have to think on my feet like this.
All right, I got one for you.
Best unsubstantiated
rumor. Here's one. I got one.
Go ahead.
Baron Davis for Eddie Curry as part of the Knicks let's get LeBron James plan.
I haven't even heard that one. You've heard that one?
It's unsubstantiated. It doesn't matter if I've heard it or not.
Well, unsubstantiated rumor means you've heard it from someone and you're just not sure how real it is.
I may have. I may not have.
Or this isn't something I made up.
I did not make this up. I've heard this and it doesn't matter who I heard it from, but I heard it. Interesting trade, though. So the Clips get rid of Davis's last year. They save about $3 million. If you're the Knicks, you get a guy who has thrived in front of big crowds his entire career, who is playing for the worst possible team he could play for. And now if you get LeBron and Bosch, now you have Baron Davis, LeBron James, and Chris Bosch in the Mike D'Antoni offense. It's pretty interesting. With Ray Allen.
I would still say, though, that that's like a – like, it's hard for me to think about the secondary moves until we see what the big move is.
Okay.
I mean, because what if the Knicks strike out? What if they don't get any of these guys?
I have another prediction. Doc Rivers will definitely not.
Keep making predictions, and then I'll think of something.
Doc Rivers will not be the Celtic coach next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's more than an unsubstantiated rumor. I mean, that's out there that he wants to stop. I mean,
as old
as they are with the window that team has, I mean, I don't think it would surprise anybody. The bigger question is, who do they go to if he walks away? Do you give it to Thibodeau?
No.
So who's your next Celtics coach?
I have been thinking about that, and I don't have a candidate I'm excited about yet. I don't count out the lockout with this stuff. If you're Doc, you know, you're coming back next year with this creaky team, and then during the lockout, you don't get paid. But if you go to ESPN or TNT, you get paid, regardless of what happens. And it's probably somewhat close to the same money. His son is the top high school prospect next year, top high school guard, or I forget where he ranks, but he's in the top, what, 10 or 12?
Yeah, but Doc's so good on TV that the day he leaves coaching, he's got a TV job. It's not like he needs to lock that up now.
That's what I'm saying. He knows that he could pick his network. So there he goes. Bye, Doc Rivers. And I still think that if P.J. Brown doesn't get hot in Game 7 of Round 2 in 2008, he gets fired that year.
Is this unsubstantiated rumors or unsubstantiated wishing on your part?
No, I actually don't blame him for what happened this year. You know, I don't know anybody who could have coached this team. It was a chemistry disaster. What's interesting is that Quentin Richardson, of all people, may have galvanized this team. Who would have thunk?
And LeBron, you know, I was going into that saying Cavs in five because I just think they're going to go small, make the Celtics move around, push the tempo, and, you know, don't get hyped up about what Boston did against Miami because the Heat are such a shell of a team right now.
Yep.
But with LeBron's elbow and my respect for the Warriors they got on that Boston team, I'm saying Celtics in six. But that does have long series potential, probably more than I.
Wait, you're saying saying the Celtics are going to win the series?
No. Cavs. Did I say Cavs?
Yeah.
And six.
Okay.
Did I say Celtics?
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel a little differently about the series than I did 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, I was like, "What's the point? This Celtics team has no heart. They're ready for the season to end, and Cleveland is going to steamroll them." Now you see LeBron's. What did you make of the lefty free throw? What the hell happened
there?
Yeah, nobody's gotten to how ridiculous it was that his elbow was in that much pain that in a 4-point game he had to shoot a left-handed free throw.
Especially when now this is an injury he's been carrying for weeks.
Oh,
it just bothered him then.
Do we think he's milking this a little? Because knowing that they're going to win this series and trying to paint himself maybe as, you know, a little MJ flu game kind of play acting a little bit.
Well, why they're even in a 4-point game with Chicago at that point is a whole other story.
Well, that supporting cast. Jameson showed up last night.
Although, like you said, Rose and Noah, any free agent has to think, you know what? Now, on one hand, the Bulls are such a dysfunctional mess as an organization, and I really put the blame on Reinsdorf. You know, he's the enabler there. He's the one who's kept Paxson in this role. And it's just a mess. It's an absolute mess. So if I'm a free agent, I'm thinking, do I really want to hitch my wagon to a Jerry Reinsdorf operation? But on the flip side, man, Rose and Noah, are pretty enticing.
If you're Dwayne Wade and they clean house and they fire their coach and their GM.
They won't. They're not. I mean, Vinny Del Negro might lose his job, but if Paxton is fired, I would be shocked.
Well, they're idiots because if they had
their... And even if Paxton's fired, Reinsdorf is still there. If I'm Wade, I'm not going. I mean, I like Noah. I like Rose. But if I'm Dwayne Wade with the cap space that Miami has, I believe in Pat Riley more.
What if they bring back Phil Jackson?
Man, you got Phil coaching everywhere.
I do. I have him all over the place. Listen, that guy's proven one thing. He goes where the dollar signs are. He goes where the dollar signs are and where the good players are.
Very smart. Jerry Buss, he'll match the price when he has to. I mean, I think he's proven that too. He'll pay when he has to pay.
Yeah, it would be tight. I mean, I don't know if that would go over well on the home front if Phil left the Lakers.
You can't.
Considering his girlfriend runs it.
You know, not just that. I mean, you got to have Phil coach that team. If you got Kobe and Powell making all this money, and you got to have Phil back. You have to.
Well, I think it's a shame because I agree with you. The Chicago scenario can't happen because anybody in Dwayne Wade's wife will tell him, you don't want to play for that organization. It's too screwed up. But, man, you put him with Rose and Noah.
I mean, as good as Rose is, you're just as excited about Noah just because he, you know, mobile, big man who does all the dirty work and doesn't need the ball. I mean,
and gives a crap.
He's perfect for all these ball-dominating superstars.
And what about, you know, this is something that I don't think people have factored in with Durant because I'm getting emails, Durant's overrated, all that stuff. People always forget that it's nice to have somebody when you're a scorer who can set picks for you. Who's setting the picks on Oklahoma City? Who's the guy? Like, you know, Bird in the 80s had McHale and Parrish setting picks for him, and especially Parrish, nobody was better. Durant doesn't have anybody, and neither does Dwayne Wade. And if Dwayne Wade went to Chicago and he had Noah setting him the picks, Derrick Rose getting him the ball, I really think he could score 35 points a game.
Hey, I just thought of my unsubstantiated rumor.
Okay, what is it?
Bosch in a sign and trade to New York with David Lee as the centerpiece of a package going back to the Raps.
Oh.
And the reason I say unsubstantiated, I have heard it from a few people who I would consider to be very plugged in, but I think that kind of the disclaimer here is, can you really have Lee and Bargnani as your front court too? I mean, Lee's not a center.
Lee would not solve Toronto's problems not being able to stop.
If you're Toronto, do you really want to go down that road? But I do think the Raptors are pretty big Lee fans. But yeah, I mean, I think it would just kind of duplicate what they already have now.
I have one more unsubstantiated rumor, and this is the best one because this came from somebody I trust, a very connected person who was hanging out with another very connected person. And that person said...
What did Bucher tell you?
No, it was not Rick Bucher. And that person said that this summer, Toronto will trade Chris Bosh to the Los Angeles Lakers for Andrew Bynum.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Vesey put that out there earlier this season.
I know it's been out.
And it makes a lot of sense. It does make a lot of sense.
I know it's been out, but this person said the deal is done, which that's the part where I'm like, all right, that's that, you're now, whatever. But it does make sense. And I'll tell you another thing. Every time I watch Bynum run in person, I love watching these guys run in person, how they carry themselves. I just don't see him playing for 15 years. He kind of labors to get up and down the court, where you watch somebody like Serge Ibaka and you think, well, that guy, you know, that guy's a freaking horse. So he would have to fall in a collision or something to get injured. I watch Bynum and he kind of gives me the same feeling I got when I watched Oden in person. Like, not totally sure his body's built to run up and down a court for 100 games a year.
What kind of seats do you get hooked up with for Lakers Thunder?
Not bad. Not bad.
Close enough to talk to your guy, or not that close?
Which guy?
Durant.
No, I'd be afraid to talk to him. I'd probably melt like a hot stick of butter. I love the guy.
He's the new Larry Bird.
Well, I just like watching him, and I think you know, I like the way he carries himself, and I think that's one thing that is getting a little bit of national acclaim is how tight knit this team is, and even little stuff like having their D League guys come to a playoff game. And, you know, I think if you're looking at the model organization, starting with the front office, I'm not going to go higher than that because Lord knows the owners have no soul. but front office down, that's the way you do it. And
you should have come to Texas. You could have driven back and forth between this series and that series.
Which
signing books along the way.
Well, I really like Dallas. I might have to come back if Dallas makes it. I don't know if San Antonio is getting me to come there, but I do want to hit a couple game two venues. In your opinion, what is the must attend playoff venue?
The must attend playoff venue. I've always been a Phoenix guy. I love going there.
Really?
But that's just a personal preference kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm from Southern California, so any chance I get to go to L.A. is a treat anymore.
Yeah.
Between Adonde and ESPN L.A., they got those Laker games on lockdown. I can't even sniff those games anymore.
Yeah. Well, you're in a good place now with the Texas teams.
And got my Thunder on the rise.
Yeah, I'm going to go to a Suns game.
Although my hate mail, I'm sure that'll start the trickle of Seattle hate mail coming in.
But last question.
The Southwest is on the rise again. My relevance is back on an upward arc.
Congratulations. We didn't talk about Orlando. I didn't learn enough from that Charlotte series.
Yeah, I've liked that team from the start of the year. Buick and I have been battling on this one since October. Yeah. I got to be honest. That Charlotte matchup to me looked a lot more difficult on paper. Well, I'm the idiot who said that Charlotte could take that thing 7. I thought that with the size that Charlotte had, with Larry Brown being so good, with Charlotte's home court, that they could cause Orlando trouble in that series. I mean, you have to be concerned that Dwight's having so much trouble staying on the floor. And I do think, I believed all along, the big issue for Orlando is going to be not that they don't have Hedo anymore. I just think when they see Shaq, whatever Shaq has left, Dwight Howard is going to get it. Shaq is going to play the best he can possibly play in that series because his contempt for Dwight Howard is that real.
Well,
is Dwight Howard going to be able to handle that? That is going to me, that is going to decide that series.
It's a great question. I would also throw in this, and I think we saw it in the Charlotte series, that Jameer Nelson is kind of the key guy on that team. As he goes, the team goes to some degree. Vince Carter, who, heading into the playoffs, I was like, they need Vince Carter to play well to win. I'm not even sure he's the fifth best guy on that team.
They are stacked.
It doesn't matter if he plays well or not. The more I watch that team, it really matters the most to them if Jameer Nelson plays well.
Yeah, and people forget they didn't even have him last year. But, I mean, he is not the pick-and-roll force that Hedo was. I mean, I think
we
have to make that clear. But, yeah, I mean, having him playing well, it's a whole dynamic that team didn't have. But Shaq Howard is going to be, if we get it, is going to be awesome.
It's a great one.
I can't wait for that. Can I give you a shout out before we wrap this up?
Yeah.
I want America to know that this weekend is the 50th anniversary of the Daily Titan, Cal State Fullerton's excellent student newspaper. I just want all your listeners to know how thankful we are that you donated a Titan-themed signed copy of your book for a silent auction. I hope it makes millions.
Oh, good luck with that. Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the Man City-Tottenham Hotspur match.
No, man, I'm not ready to talk about that publicly yet. I need more time. We got a big game this weekend first against Aston Villa.
Oh.
Let me get through that, and I'll start thinking about Nash's Spurs.
Well, so how does it break down? Because this is the last weekend.
There's three more games left for each team.
Oh, I thought this was the big weekend.
No. Three more games.
Oh.
Most teams only have two left. Spurs and us have three left.
Spurs are basically locked into that four spot, though, unless right?
No, they're it's really going to come down to the game when they play at City on March 5th, but also this weekend's results will factor in, too.
That's what I'm talking about. Isn't that this weekend?
No,
that's
next,
Tuesday.
That's next week.
Tuesday.
Whole slate of games this weekend before that.
So best case scenario, if that game comes down to the finals.
Best case scenario is that the Suns advance and I'm watching that game with Nash. That's the best case scenario.
Well, I was going to say, that could be a three-man pod. I think that would that'd be one of the great Premier League podcasts ever. Me, you, and Nash. Me just not saying much, as you guys argued.
I think we can make it happen.
So your best case scenario is Mavs Suns, which is really
Spurs Suns. Spurs Suns is fine.
No. Mavs Suns.
I need Suns. I need Suns. That's what I need.
No, Mavs Suns gives you that's almost like the Mark Stein Bowl. You have Nash on one side and Dirk on the other?
You know, that's a little hard. That's a little hard.
It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet for
that's,
you.
That's a little. No, it's very emotional.
Really?
It's very emotional. I've had to do it a couple times already. Gut-wrenching series for me.
That's
watching
great.
Nash go for 78 points on the Mavs court in 05. Dirk knocking Nash out to the Western Conference Finals in 06.
I'm rooting for it because I like when you're uncomfortable.
Oh, then that's the series for you.
Mark Stein, ESPN.com. Always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
All right, kid.
Forget the sat off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
With all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just breaking news. Subway now has breakfast. And unlike the competition, you can get it made just the way you want. Like the Subway Western Egg White Muffin Melt. Add jalapenos, banana peppers, tomatoes, or try Monterey Cheddar. Build your better breakfast at Subway. And after you build your better breakfast, grab your favorite $5 footlong to go. Made to your order all day, every day. Only at Subway.